Welcome to the podcast edition of Dream Talk Radio. I'm your host, Ann Hill, and every week I explore topics related to dreams, sleep, health, culture, and consciousness. Dream Talk Radio airs every Thursday from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific Time on KOWS 107.3 FM in Occidental, California. And you can catch the live stream at www.kows.fm. To find out more about Dream Talk Radio, visit my website at annhill.org. That's annehill.org. Meanwhile, I hope you enjoy this edition of Dream Talk Radio. This is Dream Talk Radio. I am your host, Ann Hill, and today I'm talking with Jennifer Shannon, who is a cognitive behavioral therapist in Santa Rosa. And Jennifer practices at the Santa Rosa Center for Cognitive Behavioral Therapy, and the website is srcbt.org. And we're going to talk some about insomnia mostly and anxiety and the various things that make occasional insomnia turn into a more of a systemic problem in people's lives. So, Jennifer, yeah. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, happy to be here and talk with you about insomnia. Yeah.
So you mentioned you've had some experience with insomnia.
I have, yeah. Mm-hmm. I had, in fact, after my first son was born, I think I've always was a fragile sleeper. Even as a kid, I had a lot of problems falling asleep and staying asleep and had nightmares. And then as I grew up, it was, you know, got better. But then after my first son was born, I started having problems with insomnia. I felt like I always had to be on in case he woke up or in case, you know, and then it became more of a chronic problem and actually lasted about 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And really turned around when I started working more with cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. I'm a cognitive behavioral therapist. And that's what I'll be talking about today. Yeah. Is just how to use a cognitive behavioral approach to treat insomnia.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, maybe first we can talk about what is a sort of a normal, I mean, not normal, but, mm-hmm. you know, the incidental insomnia that right. just about everybody experiences. What right. does that look like in your experience?
Yeah, I mean, really, as adults, I think everybody's probably experienced some periods, if it could be 3 days or a couple weeks of having insomnia. And basically, I mean, there's three different types of insomnia where it could be difficulty falling asleep, so sleep onset insomnia. Difficulty staying asleep, so you wake up in the middle of the night for a period of time, you know, probably more than 30 minutes to an hour. Mm-hmm. You wake up really early in the morning, can't fall asleep. And then the third type is just sort of more of inefficient sleep, but it's poor sleep quality, like you're mm-hmm. sleeping but you don't feel rested in the
yeah.
morning. So when things happen in our lives, like it could be something good that's happening, like a new job that you're excited about or moving across country or a vacation, and that can affect your sleep. So people yeah. might notice that when they're kind of excited about something, they have trouble falling asleep or they wake up a lot thinking about it. When they worry, when there's stressors that happen, with, you know, right now there's a lot of stress around the economy, and so mm-hmm. people having hours cut back or yeah. potentially losing their job or losing their job.
Yeah.
And then worrying about that, and then that can cause insomnia for periods of time.
Right.
So illnesses can cause, mm-hmm. you know, if you have, if you're having surgery or afterwards, if you have pain, that's going to mm-hmm. cause or disrupt sleep. And all of that would be considered, you know, normal. It's
yeah.
it's a reaction to what's happening in your life.
Yeah. So what makes that turn into a sort of the downward spiral, I think of it as,
exactly.
you know, I'm not getting poor sleep at night, and so that yeah. affects my day. And
exactly.
I mean, how do you see
when
that
when does it
happen?
Become a chronic problem?
Exactly.
Yeah, and really, when it becomes a chronic problem is when you start really worrying about sleep. I mean, that's a huge
uh-huh.
component of it. When you start dreading going to bed because you're
mm-hmm.
thinking of your bed as almost a torture chamber.
Ugh.
It's where you're, you know, you can't sleep or you're waking up a lot or you're ruminating, worrying about things. And so you're starting to think, you start having negative sleep thoughts.
Uh-huh.
So thoughts like, I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. If I can't sleep tonight, I won't be able to function tomorrow. If I can't function tomorrow, it just kind of goes on. And then it starts becoming more chronic. And then, so the way that you think about it, cognitive behavioral therapy is really about not so much what caused the problem, but what's maintaining the problem.
Uh-huh.
So if you're having these negative sleep thoughts, that's going to interfere. It's going to make you feel more anxious.
Right.
So when you go to sleep, if you're feeling more anxious, you're going to be less likely to sleep. And then the behavioral part of cognitive behavioral therapy is you're going to start developing different kinds of behaviors to try mm-hmm. to make up for sleep, like maybe try to go to bed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the long run, that's actually going to make things worse. Or you might start drinking more at night because
right.
you think, okay, then I can fall asleep if I drink alcohol. And that's going to disrupt your sleep.
Right.
Or you try to sleep in the morning, which is going to make it harder to sleep, go to sleep the next night.
Uh-huh.
So there's all sorts of thoughts and behaviors that people start doing because they're worrying about their sleep that is going to create a chronic problem.
Right. So how does cognitive behavioral therapy differ from sort of regular talk therapy or psychotherapy mm-hmm. where you talk about your anxiety and mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera? What is it sounds like there's overlap.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see
right.
the relationship between the two?
Yeah, with cognitive behavioral therapy, it's really working, like I said, on what is maintaining the problem. So,
mm-hmm.
for example, if you come in and you're having problems with sleep, then we're going to start looking at what are you thinking about when you go to sleep?
Uh-huh.
And having the person start catching their negative sleep thoughts. And then, so it's very concrete and very skill-based.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to look at thoughts, have the person do a lot of homework outside of the sessions,
mm-hmm.
catching their thoughts, understanding how negative sleep thoughts are going to affect their sleep. Looking at behaviors, what are they doing behaviorally?
Mm-hmm.
Catching those behaviors and then starting to change those behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, I guess I would say it's very kind of present problem focused.
Yeah.
It's not that we don't think what's happened in the past is really important.
Right.
That is important, and that got this whole thing going in the first place, but instead of going in the past and resolving it, it's like, what can we do now?
Uh-huh, right.
Sort of
which seems like it would appeal to a lot of people who don't necessarily want to, you know, go over for the nth time Uncle Joe or, you know,
right.
all the, or
right.
my evil grandmother or, you know,
yeah.
all that stuff. I mean,
or maybe they've done that and it was really,
exactly.
it was, they got a lot of insight out of
yes.
it and understanding, but they're still having the same
behavioral
problems or, you know,
yeah,
yeah or emotional problems
yeah.
that they were having before. So, yeah, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy has been found to be
mm-hmm.
very, very effective with anxiety disorders.
Mm-hmm.
So things like obsessive compulsive disorder, which is an anxiety disorder, panic attacks, panic disorder, separation anxiety in kids, all the different anxiety disorders that there are.
Yeah.
And it's also very useful with depression.
Uh-huh.
And post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, that's an anxiety disorder.
Oh,
so.
Well, I bet it is.
Yeah.
Bet it's very useful
yeah.
for
so
post-traumatic stress.
It's called an evidence-based therapy. So it's the research that's done. They've shown that it really does improve symptoms.
Because there's measurable
outcomes, which is
yes.
part of what we do. Like there's good, you know, in the sleep with the insomnia treatment, there's. You're actually looking at what their sleep efficiency is at the beginning of when they come in.
Right.
And then we're going to be tracking that weekly to see after, say, 8 to 12 weeks,
right.
has that improved? Is it measurably improved?
Uh-huh. So by sleep efficiency.
Right,
yeah.
right. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about kind of well how
Great.
I would treat somebody
Great.
If they're coming in for insomnia. And the first thing really that we would start doing is tracking their sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd start a sleep diary. And by the way, the information that I'm going to be talking about is in a wonderful book.
Oh, great.
That it's a book called Say Goodnight to Insomnia by Greg Jacobs.
Okay.
And it's just so people can actually, you know, purchase the book and
right.
it's got a really great self-help sleep program in it.
Fabulous.
Yeah. So yeah, the first thing is doing a sleep diary. So actually looking at when, you know, tracking their sleep. When do they go to bed? When do they turn their lights out? How long did it take them to fall asleep? How many times did they wake up in the middle of the night? When was their final waking up period? And then looking at how many hours of sleep they got and how many hours they spent in bed, which is sleep efficiency, and I'll talk about in just
right.
a moment. So then we start doing that. And then we do a lot of education about sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, there's basically five stages of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't know that. So the first stage is that kind of where you're just starting to, your thoughts get a little weird,
you know, as
you're just starting to fall asleep. But you're really more awake than asleep. Mm-hmm. That's stage one. And people just usually spend, a good sleeper would spend a few moments and a few mm-hmm. minutes in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move into stage two sleep, which is still a very light sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if somebody said, are you sleeping? You might say no, but actually your brain waves are changing. You are sleeping. That's considered true. It's considered true sleep.
I find a lot of naps are like that.
Yes.
Like I actually don't think I'm sleeping, but then somebody comes in and I realize I didn't hear them or something.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You're probably in stage two sleep. And stage two sleep is true sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It's significant. So your body is resting and your heart rate's changing and your breathing patterns are changing.
Mm-hmm.
Your muscles are relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
Blood pressure's going down. And then there's stage three and four sleep, which is considered true deep sleep.
Uh-huh.
And this is a very important stage of sleep because in this stage, you're really, your body's rejuvenating.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, respiration goes down and heart rate goes down, muscles really relax. And that's just a very important stage. People don't do well if they miss that stage.
Yes.
Then after that, and you spend, well, anyway, after that is REM sleep. So rapid eye movement sleep,
mm-hmm.
and that's that dream sleep, which you
right.
know a lot about.
Yeah.
And that dream sleep, your brainwave actually is very active compared to that stage 3-4.
Uh-huh.
It's where your brainwave is really, if they measure it, it gets much slower activity there. And REM sleep is actually quite active.
Uh-huh.
And then, so those are the, and that's stage 5. So those are the stages of sleep. And a healthy sleeper would go through those five stages about 5 times a night. So you spend maybe a few minutes in first stage, maybe how long do stages? One second, let's think. Maybe 45 minutes in stage 2,
yeah,
and then 45 minutes in that 3-4, and then you go into REM sleep, which could be probably around half an hour. And then you come back out into stage 2, and then you go through the whole stages again.
Uh-huh.
So you go through that several times a night.
Right. And do the ratios of time in each?
Yeah. So stage 1 is maybe 5%,
yes,
and stage 2 is the most significant. It's 59%,
mm-hmm.
Which is that lighter sleep.
Right.
Stage 3-4 is 20%, and REM sleep is around 25%.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first half of the night, we get more of that stage 3-4, that deep sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second half of the night, we get more of the REM sleep, or really
right.
be morning,
right.
you know. So
if I were a new mom and I was
mm-hmm.
just, you know, getting into that hypervigilance and not able to really shut down, I might get sleep, but I might just sort of stay at stage 2.
You might. You might, although the chances are you would be going into stage 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
It would just, you'd be getting much more disrupted sleep. The body has an amazing ability, like if you become sleep deprived.
Yes.
You know, like, okay, say you usually spend maybe 20% in that state, that deep sleep.
Yeah.
If your body's deprived, you're going to try to make up the deep sleep. Your body
yes.
forces itself to make up for that. It'll make up for that more quickly, and then you might have more REM sleep or something after
mm-hmm.
that. So even if you're, that's one of the things when people have insomnia or like waking up a lot,
yeah.
say with the first baby,
mm-hmm.
as I did, you know, I did get really worried about my
yeah.
sleep, which made it a chronic problem.
Right.
I was, you know, people get more of what they actually need than they think they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
So, although you would get disrupted sleep, and you know, when you get disrupted sleep, the primary problem with that is you feel irritable.
Right.
And your eyes hurt because you just haven't rested as well.
Yeah, they haven't gotten all soaked in nice eye solution.
That's right. Yeah, the muscles haven't, you know, had as much time
uh-huh.
to
uh-huh.
really just loosen and regenerate.
Right.
So, the primary symptoms that people get are that irritability and their mood
right.
is, you know, not as good. And
so, okay, so if the, going back to the idea of somebody coming in and starting a sleep diary, mm-hmm. they would basically say, describe their mood on going to sleep or on waking. How much detail do they?
Not mood so much. It would be more really we're just getting data. About like when they now. Along with a sleep diary, that's just the data part that we're also mm-hmm. looking at negative sleep thoughts.
Uh-huh.
So that part, like catching their negative sleep thoughts, yeah. like things like, I'm not going to sleep tonight.
I'm doomed.
Yeah, I won't be able to function. Right. All those kinds of things, which of course make us tense. So looking at that, and you get, you know, you give overall impressions of how well do you think you slept, uh-huh. that
right.
kind of a thing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and you rate yourself like on a 1 to 5 scale. 5 would be excellent. I slept great last night. And 1 would be it was terrible. And you give yourself a rating, which is partly what we're measuring to see
right.
people improve.
Yeah, it is so rare, actually, to have a night's sleep where you wake up feeling rejuvenated.
Yeah.
I mean, we get so used to waking up by the alarm and just mm-hmm. having to rouse ourselves.
Right, right. You know? It's true. Yeah, and, you know, I think we live in stressful times, and and we live in stressful times, and we often are more sedentary than we used to be,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in terms of being outdoors and getting sunlight, which all has an effect, you know, in terms of sleep.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to say that when people get into an insomnia cycle, you know, they feel like everything they attribute in terms of grouchiness or, you know, feeling bad the next day is because they didn't get enough sleep, but you know, and that's true. I'm not going to discount that because it really does make a difference when you get better sleep. But a lot of it can be just the stress you're experiencing around not sleeping. So if you
mm-hmm.
say in the morning to yourself, oh, that was horrible. What an awful night. I'm not going to be able to function today. Probably not going to feel that
right,
good.
Right.
You know, and in fact, sometimes if I really put a rating when I get like 8.5 hours of sleep, which would be huge for me. I generally do not get that much
uh-huh.
sleep. Even
uh-huh.
now, I'm a much healthier sleeper, but
uh-huh.
I probably get 7 hours of
uh-huh.
sleep a night. But if I get a lot, to tell you the truth, if I gave a rating to myself, I would probably feel a little more drowsy than I do when I get 7 hours of sleep.
Uh-huh.
So our conceptions or
yeah.
thoughts about it affect how we feel.
Yeah. So instead of waking up, we've kind of gone off the beaten path.
The educated.
But I have one more question.
Yeah.
So instead of waking up and thinking, oh, this is just great, I can barely see straight, and I have this important meeting at 10 o'clock,
right.
you know, I'm doomed.
Yes.
What would you suggest replacing that with?
Well, you know, part of what we do, why we do the education first,
yeah.
is to understand that, in fact, if people can get 5.5 hours of what we consider core sleep, they're going to be able to function as well as in terms of tasks,
mm-hmm.
problem solving, concentration even,
yeah.
as somebody who got, which the average I think is 7.5 hours for
mm-hmm.
an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the sleep thoughts is if you understand more about your sleep,
yeah.
then you don't feel as panicky about it. You don't have as many misconceptions about it. That leads to healthier sleep thoughts,
uh-huh.
more positive sleep thoughts. So, for example, when I was having insomnia and started doing the program and
mm-hmm.
for this, then some of my positive sleep thoughts were, well, I'm going to function as well as somebody who got more sleep. The areas that I'm going to have problems with, I'll feel more irritable and moody.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, okay, so then if I have that meeting at 10 o'clock or
yeah.
something important, I'm probably going to do just as well at it. I just may
uh-huh.
feel grouchier.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. Or I got core sleep. I got 5.5 hours of sleep. That's enough to function okay.
Uh-huh.
So that might be an example.
Right. And I can make this up on Saturday morning. I don't have to do anything.
Well, no.
Oh, no. Okay.
No, and
sleep
we'll get
education.
To that because that would be a problem. Yes, exactly.
Right.
People who try to make up sleep on the weekends, actually,
okay.
that's actually going to, in the short run, it may help. In the long run, it's actually going to make the problem worse.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go back a
yes.
little bit to education.
Yes,
just so
great.
One is this 5 stage. Oh, and with those 5 stages,
yeah.
it's been known, they did I think it was a Stanford research program,
mm-hmm.
and that people overestimated the time it took them to fall asleep by 30 minutes on average.
Really?
And they had these people hooked up to electrodes,
right,
so
right.
they could really
yeah.
tell when the brainwaves started
sure.
changing. So when they And the person reported on average 1 hour less sleep a night that they got that night than the recording, the actual, you know, data showed. So they're overestimating how long it takes them to fall asleep, underestimating how much sleep they're getting by an hour and a half.
That's significant.
That is. Yeah. That is significant on average. You know, yeah, that's not true with everybody, but that was what they found in the study. Mm-hmm. And so understanding the five stages and that people may be actually underestimating, because that first two stages, you can mistake that for being awake, and actually your body is getting sleep at that point.
Right.
And also, obviously, when you're awake and you're upset, whenever we extend that time, it's like the Einstein said, I think, 1 second on a hot stove feels like an hour.
Yes.
And 1 hour doing something you love doesn't feel long enough. So, I mean, when you're up in the middle of the night, it can feel like forever, and sometimes it's not quite as forever as you think. Okay, so the five stages of sleep. And then the other thing that's important to know is and this is really more when we get into sleep hygiene, but that there's body temperature really affects sleep, mm-hmm. and that there's a circadian rhythm, day rhythm, really, in terms of temperature. So, for example, when people wake up in the morning, their body temperature is lower and rises throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And it rises with things like sunlight coming in. That triggers our body for our temperature to go up. It rises with physical activity, it goes up. And when our body temperature's up, we're more alert and more active and more awake. That's the wakefulness cycle. Mm-hmm. And then as the day proceeds, there's actually a dip in the afternoon, which is really like nap time.
Yes.
Which is...
Yes.
Nap time is actually a natural thing that we really would help us to be doing more of. So there's a dip in the afternoon, and then it goes back up. The body temperature goes up, and then it starts to go down, which helps us go to sleep. Uh-huh. And so that's just important to know, and it helps when we talk about sleep hygiene, things that you need to be doing to try to get that circadian rhythm, a healthy rhythm in terms of your body temperature, to help you sleep better.
I should let people know, if you're just tuning in now, you're listening to Dream Talk Radio. I'm Ann Hill, your host, and I am interviewing Jennifer Shannon. We're having a conversation about cognitive behavioral therapy and how that can help with insomnia in particular. Mm-hmm. So we're on to the sleep education portion of how people can be helped with their insomnia through cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the other thing is that our sleep needs actually change as we age. So infants get around 18 hours of sleep a day. They're sleeping a lot. 10-year-olds, maybe around 10 hours. Teens, 8 hours. Adults in middle age is more like 7 hours. Mm-hmm. On average, that's what people are getting. And then into our 70s, it's actually 6.5 hours. And a lot of elderly people have insomnia. And the truth is, they're actually, even under best circumstances, their sleep needs seem to decrease as they age.
Yeah.
And they just don't have as strong sleep cycles.
Uh-huh.
And to understand that that's part of a natural rhythm, as opposed to panicking like, oh no, something's terribly wrong.
Right.
It's actually, our sleep needs change as we age. So, there's the sleep stages and body temperature, how that affects sleep, and that our sleep requirements do change.
Yeah.
And that's important to know, because there really is an 8-hour myth, like everybody needs 8 hours of sleep. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody doesn't need 8 hours of sleep. So the average for the adult is maybe 7.5 hours of sleep a night. 20% of the population probably gets 6 or fewer hours of sleep a night.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things, you know, in terms of did you get enough sleep, is to look at, do you need an alarm to wake you up?
Yes.
Right. And do you habitually sleep late on weekends? Like you're catching up on sleep. Do you fall asleep during meetings or things that might be a little bit boring? Do you tend to just drift off?
Uh-huh.
That would, then you're probably not getting enough sleep, and you want to work on getting more sleep. So I talked about, you know, sometimes we're often getting more sleep than we think, and that the effects of sleep loss, because we can really catastrophize that.
Uh-huh.
And if we catastrophize the effects of sleep loss, then we're going to have more difficulty sleeping.
Right. And by that, you mean just sort of spinning off into real negative thoughts about it, or?
Yeah, I mean, things like, you know, that people think the idea, I won't be able to function if I don't get enough sleep, that's just not true.
Yeah.
You can function. In fact, it's amazing how well we can function without sleep. It's not ideal, but we do function. Mm-hmm. So it's not as bad as you think it is.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever died of insomnia.
Well, they've died of accidents caused by sleep deprivation.
Right, that's true. Yeah. That's true. If you're getting chronic sleep problems.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have a bad night's sleep, people actually do pretty well. Like, if you're sleeping okay and you have a bad night's sleep, or even up to three nights bad night's sleep, you it's that chronic sleep. And so that is true, And sedentary activities, driving can be a somewhat sedentary activity.
Yeah,
you drift off. And so that is a concern.
So,
certainly, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. So, but there is a lot of catastrophizing that goes on with sleep, and that knowing that, going back to that core sleep idea with the sleep stages, that in 5.5 hours, you're going to go through probably at least 3 sleep cycles and get enough of your stage 3-4 deep sleep to be able to function.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not like not sleeping at all. And that's, if you weren't sleeping at all, you couldn't function very long on that. But people... Most insomniacs do not sleep. They just don't have good sleep. So core sleep is very, very important.
Yeah.
And then, so understanding that helps lead more to more positive sleep thoughts. So things like, you know, we talked about that. Some examples of, I didn't sleep well last night, but I'm more likely to sleep well tonight due to the biological pressure to recover that sleep, which is true.
Right.
If you try not to make it up and just go the next night, often people sleep much better. In most cases, the worst thing that will happen if I don't sleep well is that my mood will be impaired during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more positive sleep thoughts
that
are going to help not get so stressed out about sleep.
Those sound like reasonable assumptions to make.
Right.
I mean, I'm doomed sounds a little bit drama queenish.
Right. Or I won't be able to function.
More
like I'll feel irritable, I won't feel as good. That's true.
Right.
Yeah, but you'll be able to, you know, you're going to be able to do your 10 o'clock meeting.
Mm-hmm.
If you're you know, a professor, you're going to be able to teach your class.
Right.
For me as a therapist, I'm going to be able to stay with my clients and be able to do, you know, a good job.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you talked about, let's get into the behavioral part.
Right.
So that's sort of the educational part. And there's a big behavioral component to improving sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So sleep efficiency is really important, but it's more important than how many hours you slept, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And what sleep efficiency means is it's the ratio of the time that you spend in bed, so from lights out to getting up, the time you spend in bed, to the time that you're sleeping. So you can actually get, it's mathematical, and I'm not very mathematical, but here, let me try this. You basically have the time that you slept. So let's say you had lights out at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
You didn't fall asleep till 1 in the morning, and you got up at 7.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's 11 to 7 is 8 hours,
Eight hours, yeah.
But you only got...
Six.
Okay. So there we go. So sleep efficiency, what you would do is you would take the time you slept, 6 hours, divide it by the time you spent in bed, 8 hours, and you're going to come up with a percentage of how well you, how efficient you slept. So that would be like
75%. 75%,
Yeah. And a good sleeper, their sleep efficiency rating is more like 90%.
Oh, okay.
So they spend no more than 10% of the time that they're in bed awake.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. And the average for a poor sleeper is 65% sleep efficiency.
Uh-huh.
So that's what, 35% of the night they're awake.
Right.
That's not so good.
Right.
So what we're trying to do is not say how much they're sleeping, but we want to get their efficiency better.
Uh-huh.
So in order to do that, one of the things you'd said, you know, sleeping in on the weekends.
Yeah,
and that's what we do. We try to make up for lost sleep, but then we're not getting that natural sleep rhythm. It's insomniacs have a poor sleep rhythm cycle. We want to get their sleep rhythm cycle stronger and healthier. And so actually, what the first thing we do is one of the first things is sleep scheduling, basically. So, okay, so let's say that 11 o'clock, so you're getting 6 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
If you're getting 6 hours of sleep, then you don't want to allow more than 7 hours in bed.
Uh-huh, because that would be 6/7 of that ratio, which would be way more closer to 90%
exactly.
than 65.
And because then you're not spending as much time upset in bed because you're not
right.
sleeping, which is
right.
not going to help you associate bed with sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want you lying awake at night. So
right.
so basically, okay, so let's say that. Say you had to get up at 7. Well, you have a couple choices. If you're going to say, I will only allow 7 hours of sleep,
yeah.
that means you either need to don't turn lights out until midnight
uh-huh.
and up at 7, or go to sleep at or turn lights out at 11 but get up at 6.
Uh-huh.
So you have to somewhere, you can do both. You can go to bed later and get up earlier, but you need to figure only 7 hours in bed.
So you actually have to manually adjust the amount of time you
yes.
spend in bed
yes.
to sort of force your body to relax at the sleep, essentially.
Well, what it's doing, it's not necessarily forcing your body to relax, but what it is doing
which is...
Which is
counterintuitive.
Yeah, exactly. You can't even... That's exactly
like,
right.
You know.
That has never worked. I don't think
yeah.
anybody's mastered that one. I force myself to relax. Yes. No, it doesn't work. That's right. So it's really more about you're trying to strengthen the sleep needs of your body.
Yeah.
And get a healthier wake cycle and a healthier sleep cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So... It's basically making your body thirsty for sleep.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Right, that's a good way to
it's so that so that the demand for sleep is going to intensify.
Uh-huh.
And it will decrease the stress in the sense that you're not spending as much time stressing in bed.
Yes.
So that
right.
may be more relaxing. But yeah, so you're actually, and now this part is very hard for an insomniac to swallow
mm-hmm.
because it's so counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not sleeping enough, don't you need to be trying harder or sleeping more? And we're saying
lights
no.
Lights out at 7.
Yeah, exactly. Try to sleep in.
Uh-huh.
No, we want, so it's counterintuitive, but
yeah.
there's a lot of reason for it. So by restricting your sleep to closer to what you're actually getting, mm-hmm. You're going to strengthen that sleep, the demand for
mm-hmm.
sleep. And in addition to that, okay, if you're waking up, you're up more. Okay, when you're up more, that allows more time for your body temperature to rise.
Uh-huh.
You're up more, you got more sunlight,
uh-huh.
got more activity. That's going to make the demand for sleep intensify.
Uh-huh.
So, and if you didn't get, you know, if you didn't get that much sleep, but you didn't allow to sleep in the morning, you got up, even if you felt horrible,
yeah.
you're going to need to get up at that same time.
Mm-hmm.
Then be active, be out in the sun, and don't go to sleep any earlier than your scheduled time. Your demand, your body's going to be saying, must sleep, must
uh-huh.
sleep. So it helps strengthen that.
Right.
And then over, you know, really a short period of time that you're doing this, 2 weeks,
yeah.
It's amazing how this works.
Right.
Your sleep efficiency does improve. You start
right.
falling asleep easier and waking up less.
Right. What do you say to people who are doing Ambien or some, you know, different kinds of sleep aids
right.
and with more or less success? I mean, there's a lot of side effects to that stuff. How do you deal
right.
with that in conjunction with all of the behavioral stuff?
Well, basically people are coming in to see me because the Ambien or the Ativan
mm-hmm.
or the Klonopin or what, those are all benzodiazepines. Ambien and that is different, slightly different drug. But the reason they're coming in to see me is most people have tried a lot.
Yeah.
And either it's not working consistently or they don't want to depend on drugs to sleep.
Uh-huh. Right.
I mean, the problem with drugs to sleep is that it doesn't help. It doesn't really get to the problem, which is somebody's gotten into a bad sleep habits.
Yeah.
And negative sleep thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So sleeping pills aren't going to really help that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can give confidence like, oh, I can take a sleeping pill and they don't stress as much. That's almost a placebo effect, though,
right.
at that point.
That's interesting, isn't it, though?
Yeah.
That's really true.
Yeah, and I think they can be used for that. That's actually not a bad way
uh-huh.
to use it. Okay,
right.
in case. But if this is really for people who want to be able to do it, really get to the underlying things that are maintaining the sleep problem
yeah.
and be able to do it drug-free.
Right.
And you can generally do it drug-free.
Right.
This is a drug-free treatment program. Now, so people, if they're on medication, of course, it's not a good idea if you've been on something, particularly a benzodiazepine, to just mm-hmm. stop it.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been taking it. So there's ways to decrease medication use.
Mm-hmm.
You can do the sleep program and be on medication,
mm-hmm.
but you're going to be wanting to decrease your medication
uh-huh.
so that you're improving your mm-hmm. behavioral patterns and making your body naturally get back into a good
right.
sleep pattern as opposed to through medication.
We're talking with Jennifer Shannon on Dream Talk Radio today about insomnia and cognitive behavioral therapy, which you, let's just plug your website for
sure.
just a moment. The Santa Rosa Cognitive Behavioral Therapy Center.
It's the Santa Rosa Center for Cognitive Behavioral Therapy, yeah.
Okay, and the website is?
It's srcbt.org.
That's where I got confused because there weren't two C's
it's
in it.
It's true.
All right.
But we didn't want too many letters.
No,
so.
I agree. I'm with you on that one. SRCBT.org.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it sounds like getting back to the whole idea of having a drug-free solution to the insomnia problem, it sounds like probably if people are doing the Ambien or the other types of drugs, they might want to work with you in conjunction with talking to their physician about,
yes.
okay, I would really like
yes.
to wean myself off of this, or this isn't quite working and I don't want to get into anything more intense.
Right, exactly. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. When somebody's on medication, it's really good to work closely with their physician.
Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of how to, in a safe way, decrease medication
yes.
use. Absolutely.
And, you know, I have to ask you this because it comes up so much in my practice, women going through menopause.
Yes.
And just do you have any solutions for that or any particular ways that you deal with just I'm thinking about like the vagaries of it. I mean, one day you can't sleep or 1 week and then it's sort of tripping the switch on and off. And it's
or
very
hot flashes. Which are
going to
interfere with sleep.
And it's very hard to regulate, and it goes on for years sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't have, you know, as far as menopause, good solutions to that.
Yeah.
Although what I would say is that working with improving sleep behaviors and sleep thoughts and understanding
mm-hmm.
more about sleep,
yeah.
you're less likely to make the problem worse by
mm-hmm.
fretting about it. So if
mm-hmm.
you're going through and you're getting hot flashes and things like that and thinking, oh my gosh, I can't sleep, or I'm going to have that happen tonight, or now it's happening
mm-hmm.
and I won't, those aren't going to help you. And so understanding how much sleep that you need and you'll still be able to function
right.
And not trying to fall into bad behavioral patterns like making up for sleep,
mm-hmm.
That's going to help get through
yeah.
that time. And also, I mean, another part of the program, this, you know, insomnia, the cognitive behavioral therapy, is working with relaxation.
Uh-huh.
And relaxation, you know, has been known to help with premenstrual syndrome,
right.
menopausal things, even hot flashes.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're doing a relaxation, you know, doing, say, a regular 20-minute relaxation
yeah.
a day, that's going to help your body. I mean, it has a powerful effect on our physiology,
yes.
relaxation, just like stress does.
Right.
And just like hormonal fluctuations do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a good, you know, if you're doing 20 minutes of relaxation a day, then your body's going to be, it's basically called the relaxation response.
Mm-hmm.
You're plugging into that and your body's going to do better with hot flashes
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
stress, and that'll help
right.
with sleep.
And it sounds like just engaging in the process of writing things down and
mm-hmm.
collecting data
absolutely.
Just makes you more aware of, oh, right, I had this glass of red wine, and then that triggered a hot flash, and then, you know, the snowball effect
that's
through
true.
The night.
Right.
You'd be able to catch that stuff maybe a little
yeah.
quicker.
Understanding what you can control.
Right.
So, okay, we can't control our hormones or going through menopause or hot flashes,
right.
but what can we control?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can control how much time we spend in bed. We can
mm-hmm.
work on the ways we're thinking about our sleep and thinking about what's happening to us and become more positive about that, because that's going to decrease our stress
mm-hmm.
and help feel more relaxed and
right.
sleep better. And, yeah, there's other things, absolutely. I mean, you know, some other things in addition to basically scheduling sleep or
right.
restricting sleep to get that sleep efficiency improved.
Mm-hmm.
that some other things in terms of sleep hygiene things are that associating bed with sleep and sex and not with maybe talking on the phone or studying or doing preparation for the next day's 10 o'clock meeting in bed, that you really use bed for just specific activities. And you can, I mean, television, you know, I think that can be a stimulating thing for some people. And if it is, it's not a good thing to do in bed. Some people, they find it very relaxing. So you want to kind of limit your TV time. That might be acceptable for some people. Making sure that you feel drowsy before you, you know, go turn those lights out. So even if it's midnight and you're not drowsy, don't turn the lights out. You know, wait till you're drowsy. Read a little bit more. If you start feeling drowsy, then turn the lights out. Other things, I mean, once people do go to sleep, they might wake up. And if you wake up and you're awake for 20 minutes, you can just kind of maybe do some deep breathing or, you know, whatever. But if you're awake for longer than that, it's best to don't keep spending time thinking you're going to fall back to sleep. You know, at that point, turn the light on and do some reading or get out of bed and maybe do
so
some
after
reading.
What would you say would be?
I'd say after 30 minutes.
30 minutes.
If you haven't fallen back asleep or you're not asleep in the first place, don't stay in bed, because most people, when they stay in bed, they start getting tense. Okay, I've got to fall asleep. Oh my gosh, now it's 2 in the morning. You know, I've been that kind of a thing, which is just going to jack you up more. You
Show
know?
Of hands, how many people have experienced
that? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you know, who hasn't had that experience?
Hasn't? Oh, geez, it's horrible.
I mean, exercise, you know, so say, again, hormonal things or stress or something's happened in your life, exercise is going to help everything. And exercise, we know, does help with sleep. And it doesn't have to be, you know, 2 hours at the gym 6 days a week. It can be taking the stairs, just be more physically active, taking the stairs, mowing the lawn, sweeping the porch, washing your car. I mean, it can be things that you need to get done anyway or something, and those are physical exercise. So people who are doing things physically, that's going to help with sleep. Alcohol is, I mean, it's in terms of that, people often feel like, you know, that nightcap idea is going to help me sleep. It does help you fall asleep, but alcohol takes a period of time to metabolize, and then when it's metabolized, oftentimes you're kind of more awake. It can bring you, like, you can wake up after a couple hours. Like, yeah, you fall asleep, but then you're awake and you have trouble falling back asleep. So with some of the things we can control are...
continue.
Okay. Our alcohol consumption, and basically, you know, a good rule of thumb would be to, if you're going to have a drink, 2 hours before you go to bed, and keep it to one drink, which is probably a good healthy thing to do anyway.
Yeah, 2 hours before bed. That seems about right.
So that could be at dinner, you know, a glass of wine or a drink. But not using alcohol to try to sleep, because that's actually going to backfire. And then caffeine. You know, it's okay to drink caffeine. You don't want to drink probably more than a couple cups of coffee or, you know, tea. And you want to do it in the beginning part of the day as opposed to the later part of the day. And the thing is, with people have that natural dip, you know, your body temperature goes down in the afternoon. So you're going to feel tired whether you got 8 hours of sleep or not. But if you didn't get that much sleep and you're having problems with insomnia, for one thing, we'll interpret that as, oh, I didn't sleep, that's why I'm so tired. We all get tired in the afternoon generally. And then sometimes we try to make it through our days by drinking caffeine at that point. Well, that's, again, going to backfire, because if you're drinking caffeine late in the day, that can affect your sleep that night. So those would be things that you can control that will help you get into a healthier sleep pattern.
I have done dream workshops at medical marijuana clinics, and the sort of the same thing with medical marijuana with insomnia. They actually have to use a different something a little bit different, or smoke earlier in the evening, particularly if they want to remember their dreams, because the THC, well, there's just a lot of inhibitors to dreaming, and so it's been really interesting learning more about the different, because I never would have thought about that, but when I started doing workshops in this clinic, I realized that not only were people worried about that, but they had also, other people had figured out how to sort of get past that. Well, if I do edible this or that mm-hmm. instead of actually, you know, so it makes, right. it's kind of the same, along the same lines of the caffeine or
yeah,
the
what substances are going to affect your sleep. Exactly. And some that might make you feel more drowsy and put you to sleep, but are going to affect your, because, you know, the cycles of sleep, if you've got a substance in there, yeah. that's going to affect how, when the substance is metabolized,
yeah.
how that's going to affect those sleep cycles.
Right, right.
Right.
Yeah. And certainly the REM sleep, so I guess the THC affects,
yeah.
it does something with the REM sleep.
Yeah, I don't exactly know the, you know, the chemical thing that's going right. on, but it seems to be a pretty widespread problem. And then, of course, they start worrying because they used to dream and they don't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So what's, you know, mm-hmm. again, that worrying,
yes.
what's wrong?
Worrying,
not,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. That can yeah. really confound the problem.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, let's see, you were talking about something, one thing I noticed on your website that it struck me is that what you do is you describe it as a collaborative approach,
mm-hmm.
sort of like a coach and an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
I like that idea because it's more like reaching top efficiency or working, you know, to the maximum of our potential in a certain way rather than fixing something that's broken or,
right.
you know, any other of those kinds of metaphors.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of therapy is collaborative. Probably
yeah.
most people would say therapy is collaborative. In cognitive behavioral therapy, it's really essential. First of all, it's not so much like you're coming in and I'm going to do it for you. You
yeah.
know, I'm not the expert that can do it for you.
Right.
It's really, tell me what's going on with you and what you want to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And then, so I'm going to really allow the client to tell me what the problems are and what their goals are.
Right.
Then I can, as a coach, as a therapist, say, okay, well, if that's what's going, those are the problems and these are the goals, these are some ideas that we can come up with that can be useful for that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with sleep, you know, with the sleep program, it's a labor-intensive program. People
yeah.
need to be willing to monitor their sleep. They need to be willing to actually start restricting or scheduling sleep
yeah.
and understanding why they would be doing that. The
right.
collaboration isn't, I'm going to tell you you need to do this. It's, here's why it
mm-hmm.
would work.
Mm-hmm.
And are they willing to take that on? And,
right.
and so, you know, like with the coach athlete, a coach, no matter how great that coach is,
mm-hmm.
unless the athlete goes through the drills and practices things,
right.
they're not going to get their skills as an athlete to improve. The same thing with therapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's really the same thing. I mean, we know how hard change is.
Yes.
we're almost allergic to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, we have some natural resistances built
That's
up
right.
to it, certainly.
That's right.
Yeah.
Natural resistances. That's
yeah.
a much better way to put it. Yeah. And for good reason. I mean, a lot of the things that we do it for a reason. I mean, even
yes.
sleeping in on Saturday morning, I understand that you're trying to make up for sleep because you're not getting enough.
Right. So why doesn't that work?
So the reason that doesn't work, if you sleep in on the weekends,
yeah.
okay, let's say Saturday night, you sleep in Sunday, you slept
mm-hmm.
in Saturday, so you're getting up later in the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
So say you get up at 9 or 10 in
mm-hmm.
the morning. That's going to allow less time for your body temperature to start to rise and fall by the time it's you want to go to sleep Sunday night to get ready for work. So so you're messing with your sleep rhythm, you know, you're going to, if your body temperature starts rising, say, an hour upon awakening, so your body temperature starts raising at 11, it's going to then go down much later. So
uh-huh.
you want to get to sleep at 11, but now sleeping in, it's not going to start really going down until later in the evening. So when
mm-hmm.
you try to fall asleep at your regular time, it's going to be more difficult to
mm-hmm.
do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you might start worrying about that. And so it doesn't
right.
support... Really important when you're in a sleep program is that on the weekends, every day for the sleep program, that first 2 weeks, you
uh-huh.
get up at your scheduled time.
Uh-huh.
You know, you
right.
just force yourself up. And, you know, the other problem people have is, you know, the other thing they do is most common things is try to sleep in the morning or go to sleep earlier in the night.
Yeah.
Again, you're going to sleep earlier in the night. Your body temperature hasn't had time to drop.
Uh-huh.
So you're fighting your natural rhythm.
Right.
And when you do start restricting sleep, people actually have a hard time staying awake sometimes.
Yes.
And they say, I have to fall asleep. I say, get out of bed and walk around. Do not fall asleep until it's your scheduled time.
Wow. That
yeah,
could
is
be
that
really,
intense?
Well, that's an opportunity for more exercise.
It could be. Although, actually, with exercise, here's another thing.
Yeah.
You don't really want to do exercise within 2 hours of bedtime.
That's true, yes.
Because when you exercise, your body temperature goes up.
Right.
And we, for sleep, your body temperature needs to come down.
Right. So it sounds like, so that sounds like a pretty challenging thing to go, it's sort of, you know, spending a certain amount of time going against our the tendencies that, you know, our habitual tendencies.
Exactly.
I won't say natural, but habitual.
Yes.
Because we've built up a habit of inefficient sleep.
Right.
So how long does that sort of a behavioral adjustment part of the program, how long does that generally take?
If people do it, it doesn't take long at all.
Oh, okay.
But then, you know, oftentimes people won't do it. You know, it's like they'll say, oh, I couldn't get up. And then we'll go back to, okay, if you don't get up, here's what will happen. Take the data. What did happen when
right.
they slept in? How hard or easy was it to fall asleep
the next night?
Because they're collecting data. They can see, like, when they do get up, at the same time, even though they're not allowing as much time in bed, they'll start noticing their sleep efficiency is going up.
Mm-hmm.
They're falling asleep easier,
mm-hmm.
and they're staying asleep
mm-hmm.
better. Now, that's very rewarding.
Yeah.
So it is a demanding program. I'd say all cognitive behavioral therapy is demanding.
Mm-hmm.
It's in order to meet the goals that you have, you got to do a lot of work and
right.
risk change.
Right.
That there's a risk because you don't know it's going to work.
Yeah.
But you have to think, what you have been doing isn't working,
right.
so let's try something else, and here's why. And then look, if you slept in, what was your sleep like? And when you can really, as a client, examine those results, it starts
mm-hmm.
going, yeah, it's true. Those old
mm-hmm.
ways that I'm trying to help myself
mm-hmm.
are not working. It's actually making
mm-hmm.
it worse.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular age range of people that normally come to see you? I mean, I've talked with doctors at colleges, and there's a lot of insomnia in college, but what
mm-hmm.
ages do you generally see?
Well, in my practice, I see children and adults, children,
oh, okay.
teens, and adults.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say in terms of children,
yeah.
If their parents are, you know, calling me up because their child's not sleeping well, it's usually later elementary school, so maybe 10, 11,
uh-huh.
12,
mm-hmm.
Problem that they're having problems. And a very similar to what, you know, this is an adult program I'm talking about, but you can adapt it with kids.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And that can be hard because you actually do some sleep restriction with them,
right,
too.
Right.
Now, there's a lot of other reasons they might not be sleeping, that they are afraid of being away from the parent, or
mm-hmm.
they're scared of, you know, kidnappers coming in. And so,
right.
you know, with positive sleep thoughts, we work
right.
work with thoughts. We try to identify
mm-hmm.
what is their scared thought
right.
and help them see, you know, become more realistic in their
yes.
thinking so that they
right.
can think in a way that's going to be help more relaxing
right.
for them.
Right.
And adults, you know, I work with a practice where I don't just do insomnia, I do anxiety
uh-huh.
disorders.
Right.
And if I just did insomnia, I'd probably be able to answer that question better. But
uh-huh.
I would say, yeah.
I don't
notice one peak of age, although we
uh-huh.
do know that the older adults are going to be
yeah.
sleeping less, and if they
right.
get worried and fret about that, it can become right. a bigger problem.
Right. Well, I think it's so great that just that you have this approach, and it's here, it's local, sounds like it's backed up by a lot of success, you know, a lot of people meeting their goals, and
right.
seems to have a lot of effectiveness.
Yeah, it's really gratifying, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, for myself, like I said, the beginning of the show, that I had insomnia for about 15 years after my
yeah.
first son was born,
right.
part of why I know, you know, it's nice to have suffered that way and be able to do something where
yes.
I'm a much more confident sleeper. My sleep has improved.
Oh, that's great.
Huge. Not to say, I think some people just, like when I go someplace, take a trip,
uh-huh.
I don't sleep good the first
yeah.
couple nights.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so I still would consider myself a fragile sleeper,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like it's not a problem for me anymore,
right.
where I'm
right.
dreading and fretting, which I certainly was doing for a long time.
Yes.
So it's very, for people who are suffering, it gives hope and it helps them feel in control again, because
mm-hmm.
you feel really out of control when you're not sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And as a therapist, it's extremely gratifying to be able to
yeah.
help people in a concrete way with something they may have been suffering with for years.
Well, you know, sleep is such an interesting part of the human life, because we sort of take it for granted. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of those natural but also sort of mysterious processes. I mean, why do we need to sleep? And so, I mean, what I hear from listening to you is that it's sort of taking the mythologizing, taking some of the abstract thinking out of it and kind of looking it in a sort of in the daylight, if you will. And saying, okay, well, this is what, you know, I don't know it really why we have to sleep, but right. I know that I need to sleep,
right.
And I'm not sleeping enough. So here's the ways I can work with that. It just seems like it right. must take, it demystifies it. That's the word I was looking
Yeah, I think
for.
It does help demystify it. And you know, part of, you know, what I found really fascinating, I think, I didn't know that your temperature changes that much throughout the day.
Yeah.
Not a ton. It's, you know, by maybe 1 degree, but that degree makes a difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to when we worked, when we lived in more, agrarian, you know,
right.
where we were out in the fields and working and getting mm-hmm. sun and physical activity, insomnia, I mean, they didn't take data maybe on it, but we know it's increasing.
Yeah.
And people are indoors more and they're in front of their computer screens
right.
or media, you know, so kind of getting back to physically supporting our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
To sleep well, to have it. And that's going to help us be healthier overall.
Overall, yeah. And pass those habits down to our kids, which is another...
That's always, really, yeah. Yeah, right.
Yes. Well, Jennifer Shannon, thank you so much for talking to me. You're listening to Dream Talk Radio. We've been talking with Jennifer Shannon, who is a therapist at the Santa Rosa Center for Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. And their website is srcbt.org. And any parting thoughts, any closing things you'd like people to know about just working with insomnia?
I think, closing thoughts. I think really that there's, you know, there's really hope out there. There's it's a treatable, very treatable problem. And don't despair.
Well, thank you so much for sort of laying that out, giving people information.
Yeah,
I appreciate
it's really
that.
Been a pleasure.
Great.
Thank you.
That ends this week's Dream Talk Radio Show podcast. Thanks for listening, and remember to tune in every Thursday from 9 to 10 a.m. at www.kows.fm. This is Ann Hill, and I'll see you again next week.